Welcome back. For those of you joining us just now, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We're podcasting the show. You can find out more information on our website at kalw.org. Click on news, and you'll find our program listed there. And that's where you can listen to past shows. And if you have a show idea for us, drop us a line. We're at yourcall@kalw.org. Or go ahead and call us. The phone lines are open at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can leave a comment on our website. We always love to hear from listeners with show ideas and feedback. So now we're going to shift our focus to a growing crisis. Student homelessness is soaring in Monterey County as families face skyrocketing rents, a housing shortage, and devastating cuts to a little-known federal program that has given migrant children a path to opportunity. So to discuss these topics and her reporting on it, we are joined by Isabeau Doucette, a journalist and visual artist who has produced for Al Jazeera English, written for The Nation, the Christian Science Monitor, and the Toronto Star, among others. She's also contributed to the book Tectonic Shifts, Haiti Since the Earthquake. Good to have you with us, Isabeau.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on. And since we were just talking about local journalism, the articles that you've written about homelessness among the student population, which we're going to talk about, and the cuts to these programs for children of migrant farm workers, it's such a great example of local journalism. Can you just talk about your view of the state of local journalism and how newspapers like The Guardian have helped encourage it by publishing and supporting the work that journalists like you are doing?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to send a shout out to Rick and Julie. I saw the film Stripped for Parts several months ago, and it is absolutely just chilling and devastating and such an urgent and important film. And Julie is just such an inspirational journalist. So, yeah, I encourage everyone to go watch that. It's really, really terrifying. And yeah, I mean, The Guardian is trying to its best. I mean, I feel very grateful that, you know, my editors just sent me out to Monterey and, you know, I came back with, you know, a couple stories. And, you know, you just can't replace sort of boots on the ground, talking to actual people, and piecing together a story, you know, based on conversations you're having in person. That, you know, there's no way that AI or whatever media conglomerates churning out drivel, you just can't compete with that. So I think that's, you know, as we deal with this, you know, devastating landscape in the media industry, and AI coming along and sort of threatening to take all our jobs, I come back to this idea that, like, there's no way that AI can go out and talk to people, mm-hmm. you know, in different languages. You know, all the people I was interviewing were Spanish speaking. That gives me hope.
Yes. Well, lots of reasons for hope, even though the story is so disturbing, as you noted, and Rick and Julie, their work really does uncover both the disturbing aspect, but does leave listeners and viewers with some reason for optimism. So that part at least is encouraging. But let's talk about your work, Isabeau, because you've focused on the migrant education program, which has opened doors for kids of seasonal farm laborers. I believe the program has been in existence for 60 years. Can you tell us more about it and how it works and why it's important?
Yeah, so the program started in the 60s to try to account for the fact that a lot of children whose parents work in seasonal agriculture have to move from one school district to another, you know, a couple of times, maybe a year, because their parents' jobs have to follow the crops and their livelihood depends on, you know, where the work is. And so that creates a lot of disruptions for kids, you know, starting the school year in one district and then just being uprooted and plopped down in another school district, but only for a couple of months, because then they're going to have to go back to a different school district, you know, or even just, during seasons, you know, the winter months, a lot of seasonal laborers are unemployed and or trying to figure out how to cobble together income, doing odd jobs or moving to places where they could live more cheaply. So yeah, that's very disruptive for students, and has, leads to much, just creates a very difficult pathway for them to sort of achieve and graduate and go on to higher education. And so this program was set up to kind of compensate for that by having after school tutoring, Saturday school. A lot of parents in seasonal agriculture worked on Saturdays. So then having a summer school and I think also really importantly, creating a kind of community for kids to not feel like they're the only one that's always like the new kid on the block, you know, that there's other kids there who are in the same position as them, who are, you know, kind of shuffled around from one school district to another. And, you know, often maybe they might be speaking Spanish at home, but going to school in English. So other students who are also kind of dealing with these kinds of two worlds colliding, and this program has been incredibly successful at helping these kids achieve, you know, like following from TK all the way to graduation, helping them apply for universities. And I spoke to this one woman who's now in pre-med in San Diego. She wants to be a pediatric oncologist. And she said that the migrant student program, she joined speech and debate competitions where she would go and debate like with other school districts all the way up to you know, the state level. And that really like helped her ability to communicate and make an argument and present herself. So yeah, it's now all under, you know, threat. The Trump administration wants to gut it.
Yes. Well, and it was so helpful to have that focus on that student, Regina Zarate Garcia, who you mentioned is now at UC San Diego, really a powerful example of what this program can do for individual people like her. It's easy to kind of make these programs feel like a little bit faceless in terms of its impact, but you just mentioned how it's under threat now and could be slashed or eliminated by the Trump administration. First of all, how much does this program cost, and what are the proposals now to gut it?
It's I guess it's all going to be up for debate in the budget, you know, that they're you know, the government shutdown that's looming. How much does it cost? Ooh, I have to go look it up. Let's see.
Don't worry about the numbers, but mainly just curious about the sort of the standing of the program and what the proposals are about it.
Well, they just want to gut it. So the president's skinny budget eliminated it entirely from the budget for the first time, you know, since its existence. And they were claiming that it was encouraging people to travel to, you know, it was encouraging mobility and allowing ineligible non-citizens to strip resources from U.S. university students, which is, you know, just so weird. Like, I mean, if parents could work one field and have all sorts of different things come out of that one field throughout the whole year, I'm sure that they would prefer that, but that's just not how agriculture works. You actually have to go to where the stuff is growing and, you know, plant it, harvest it. But also stripping universities, I mean, of resources for U.S. students. I mean, first of all, like, there are a lot of U.S. students. This is not necessarily for a lot of the people are documented, are Americans, you know, so there's a lot of you know, like this applies to American farm workers. It's not just all, not everyone that works in agriculture and fishing is a non-citizen.
Yes. Such an important point. And this point you're making about the nature of that work, for the fact that these farm workers do have to be migratory. They have to go where the crops are, and what that does to their children. I think really shined a light on this. So for those of you just joining, this is Your Calls Friday Media Roundtable. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind, and we're talking to Isabeau Doucet, a journalist and visual artist who has produced for Al Jazeera English, written for The Nation, The Toronto Star, among others, also contributor to the book Tectonic Shifts, Haiti Since the Earthquake. And we're talking about the impact of cuts to a program that has been benefiting children of migrant farm workers and others, and what some of the proposals are to further gut it. The number to call to join the conversation, if you have questions about this program, if you have questions about student homelessness in Monterey County, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, the number to call to join this program is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255, or email us at yourcall@kalw.org. And as we're talking about this program, there were already plans that were already thrown into chaos due to Trump administration efforts to abruptly freeze nearly $7 billion in congressionally approved education funds from the budget. Can you talk about what happened this summer and how that really is sort of the opening salvo here in this effort to now eliminate the program?
Yeah, so the just very suddenly the administration froze money that had already been, you know, approved by Congress, and that kind of just threw chaos like into the entire kind of education system. It wasn't just the migrant student program, it was a bunch of different programs. And, you know, for about a month, you know, there was just kind of chaos and disarray, and, you know, summer schools were kind of, I think, like disrupted. And it wasn't until 24 states, including California, sued the Trump administration, including 10 Senate Republicans. They all signed a public letter urging the White House to reverse course and release the funds, which they did. But for the coming year, you know, they're still just trying to cut all sorts of programs. And so this is all going to be debated in the coming weeks. I don't know if there's a way of like having if there's going to be a new lawsuit, but it's devastating. And California, you know, for the migrant education program, which serves like 250,000 students across the country, it serves about 80,000, you know, youth from, you know, TK to 21 are eligible in California.
What's going to happen to these kids then if they can't access this program?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, this is where they go to after school for help with their homework. This is where they go to on Saturdays. Like it's a huge kind of a, almost like a childcare support for these students while their parents are at work. Often they're, you know, if their parents, you know, don't speak English, they can't really help the students with their homework. And it's also just a really safe place for them to be. You know, a lot of these rural communities, or in Salinas where I was, you know, Regine talked about how, you know, there's a lot of gangs, and, you know, it's not necessarily like a safe place to just be like bumming around on the streets after school, you know? And so that provided a very, safe place for these students to just be able to kind of focus on their studies and have a sort of a vision for their future, beyond going beyond following their parents into agriculture. This gave them, you know, different ideas about their future, like that they could be a lawyer or a doctor or, you know, any number of other professions, that this is not out of reach for them. They even do this amazing thing where they like draw a on the ground. They play hopscotch, and like they kind of go from first grade to fifth. And then if you keep going, then you're in like, you know, high school, and you finish high school, and they have someone stand there with a cap and gown, you know, to sort of show them that this could be their future. And from there, they could go to university or to a trade school and like really show them that there are options. So yeah, it's devastating, like for Regine, you know, all the students that she's been tutoring, these students, and just the idea that they're not going to have the same opportunity as she had, that she benefited from so much.
Yes. Well, and you have another story that talks about, you know, another aspect of this, which is the rise in the homeless population in Monterey, particularly among students. And the number of students experiencing homelessness in California has risen by almost 20,000 in 2024, reaching an average of 4%, the highest rate of student homelessness in a decade. And this is according to the Public Policy Institute of California. Can you talk about this crisis? What is this like? What did you find out on the ground in Monterey County, where 16% of kids who are enrolled in public schools have experienced homelessness at some point?
Yeah, it's 16% is just staggering. And this is, you know, amidst a general kind of the overall enrollment in schools is going down, you know, across California, because, you know, fewer people are moving here, more people are moving out, you know, the fertility birth rates are going down. And so the idea that like, oh, wow, student homelessness is going up amidst all these other indicators are going down is really staggering. But it's highest in Monterey County. And I mean, what shocked me was just how expensive everything is. I mean, and if a lot of, you know, these families, if you're working in seasonal agriculture, or, you know, working in a car wash, or, you know, packing food in a food processing plant, you know, you're making minimum wage. So if you do the math, you know, one of the families I spoke to, when they first, they're currently living in a converted garage behind a house. And this is a converted, they're paying $1,800 a month for a converted garage. And this is like they moved there because they were previously living in a house with three other families, and they were paying $1,000 a month to like be crammed into a house. So the majority of the homelessness is in these kinds of situations. 90% of these students are living in what's called doubled up. So you're not like homeless on the street. You're just living in a shelter that's not considered adequate. So in a garage, or living several families crammed into one house. But they're still paying, like, you know, the rent on a house went up to $1,300, and this is to be sharing one room for like a whole family.
Yeah.
And if you're making minimum wage, like that's $1,300 is like, that's like half your monthly wage. So
and what explains this housing shortage in that region?
Well, I think there's a bunch of different factors, and I don't know, like, for sure. Like, obviously there's, you know, rent inflation, wage stagnation. There's just the housing crisis that, you know, has been a problem across California, not enough housing being built. But I think in Monterey, there is more housing instability because there is really high seasonal agriculture. And like I said, there's a lot of turnover. People have to move to where the work is. And so there's just a kind of a general housing instability because people are constantly moving around, depending on the seasons, depending on, you know, where they need to go. And so people are living, you know, several families to a house, you know, when they've got work. But it's not just migrant students, you know, it's not just people in seasonal agriculture. I mean, in Monterey County, I think 13% of the unhoused families are unhoused students are working in migrant families. Like, it's across the board. It's everyone. I mean, like, just, you know, for whatever reason, if your, you know, parents lose their job or they get sick, they don't have enough money to pay the rent, you know, this can cause them to suddenly become homeless. And like the rate at which Section 8 housing vouchers are being used in that county is right back up to where it was during the pandemic at 78%.
So, Isabel, we're just about out of time. Just very briefly, I mean, any solutions here on the horizon?
I mean, maybe if they could build a lot more housing, I mean.
Yeah, more farm worker housing, more low-income housing.
Right,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate, first of all, your work to highlight what's going on locally in Monterey County, and of course, for coming here on Your Calls Media Roundtable and talking about your reporting. Isabeau Doucette, journalist and visual artist, produced stories for Al Jazeera English, and you can find her articles on The Guardian. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It was wonderful to have you on, and keep up the good work covering Monterey County. And that is our show today. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit our website at kalw.org. You can also follow us on social media. Email any show ideas and feedback you have to yourcall@kalw.org. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind. It's Your Call.